Okay, so let me just very briefly then just remind you that the idea here with looking at these things, we are looking at the Buddha at the very beginning before he has left the household life. So we are looking at the things that motivate the Buddha to become a monk, yeah, or the Buddha to be, to become a monk, to practice the path, to overcome suffering. That's what we're looking at. So what these things are, they are essentially about right view, yeah, the beginning of the Noble Eightfold Path, seeing the world in the right way. So when we're looking here at the idea of rebirth, it's looking at right view and how to develop the idea of that kind of right view. Yeah, and if you do develop this idea of right view, which is rebirth, it has very powerful consequences. Yeah, it actually starts to make you live your life according to the Noble Eightfold Path, essentially. So let us carry on with this idea of right view. What other aspects are there to this right view? And we have seen it already. And what should be described as liable to grow old? Partners and children, male and female bondservants, goats and sheep, chicken and pigs, elephants and cattle are liable to grow old. Yeah, kind of obvious. These are all the wealth that you have, all these beings in your life, and also your family members, etc. Everyone is liable to grow old. If you are too attached to these things, you have a problem. It's kind of sweet that they are attached to their slaves, isn't it? Male and female bondservants. Oh, my dear slaves, I don't want to let go of you. That's kind of nice kind of slavery, isn't it? Oh, my slave, let me give you a hug. It's like you're looking after your slaves. It's not kind of the harsh kind of slavery, but the friendly kind of friendly slavery. I'm not sure about this. Okay. Call employees. Right? Okay. Is that what you call employees here in Malaysia? Slaves? Volunteers, that's what it's, slaves, volunteers, employees, it's all the same. Okay, that's really nice. I'm glad we can have a bit of fun together, actually. That's really cool. So, all right. So these attachments, right, the attachments to all of these things are liable to grow older. Someone who is tired, infatuated, and attached to such things, themselves liable to grow old, seeks what is also liable to grow older. Yeah, so if you are fond, just being fond and attached to these things means that you are seeking it because your mind is moving in that direction, moving towards that, those things, right? So that is the idea of growing older. Let me stop there for a short while. I'm not going to say too much about this because I talk about old age on many other retreats before, but just to maybe very briefly mention the idea of old age. And it is useful to contemplate, knowing how to contemplate these things. And one of the ways of contemplating this is to see old age happening in the people around you. Even more powerful is to see it happening in yourself, right? And I always find it interesting looking at myself in the mirror and seeing kind of, you know, seeing kind of new lines appearing in your face, seeing kind of the hair getting more and more gray, seeing your kind of gradually your muscles kind of waste away, because what happens when you get old, less muscles, and everything is kind of really getting really dodgy and unpleasant. And what is interesting when you look at yourself in the mirror and you see these things happening, yeah? Even those of you who are quite young, you will see it eventually, I promise you. It's going to happen to you. You have no choice about this. When you look at yourself in the mirror, you will start to notice a reaction. Yeah, you react to it, and you are not happy about it. Is that right? Or are you happy about it when you see kind of old age creeping on? Often we're not happy about it. Yeah, it's kind of unpleasant. There is like a rejection of these things. Yeah, you're no longer in the prime of youth as you used to be. You no longer have the strength that you used to have. Your eyesight is going. I can't live without the glasses anymore. I just see a blur. I can see there are people here, but I can't barely recognize you without my glasses. So this is life. Yeah, things gradually going down the hill, and you see yourself gradually moving away. And the initial reaction for most people when they see that is, oh no, don't want to see it. Maybe you are good Buddhist, maybe you think differently, but this is a normal reaction in the world. Don't want to see that. And so you kind of sorrow and grieve, and you become upset about growing older. And then the next thing you think is, what can I do to avoid this? And then you start dyeing your hair. You start using Botox. Right? I'm not going to ask you whether anyone has used Botox here, but it always surprises me that I sometimes hear about people who use Botox. I never thought they would use this kind of thing, but sure enough, they have used Botox, right? Because they don't like the wrinkling of the skin and these kind of things. And so we try to avoid the old age. We try to kind of close our eyes. We try to solve the problem. We try to use our ingenuity and plastic surgery and what have you to avoid the reality that actually is there. And then we tend to think that we can solve the problem of old age by using our money, using our resources, using whatever it is to kind of hide these things. Instead of actually seeing things for what they actually are, we hide behind something. We don't want to see reality. And that is terrible. As Buddhists, it's the opposite of what we should be doing. Because it stops you from being able to really see reality as it actually is. As long as you think that you have the power to overcome the effects of old age, I'm going to go to the gym more often, I'm going to kind of make sure I got enough exercise, enough Botox, enough kind of makeup or whatever, and I'll be fine. It will look like I'm 20 years younger than I actually am, right? And sometimes that is exactly what people do. But actually, you're just fooling yourself. You're pretending that you can keep at bay one of the powerful natural forces in the world, which is the force of impermanence and the force of aging. You cannot withstand this. So instead of doing that, when you look at yourself in the mirror, right, and you see that you're getting older, and maybe you don't like what you see, stay there for a minute and allow it to sink in. Don't reject it. Don't sorrow. Just observe what is going on and see what happens. And if you are able to observe the aspects of old age without sorrowing, without thinking about what I can do to overcome it, that is where something starts to happen. And what starts to happen is that you start to get small insights into the nature of the body. You start to think, wow, this is the reality. This is really true. Why? And the moment you realize this is the truth and you realize it's going to continue that way until you die, at that moment, you are reducing your attachment to the body. There's an insight that happens in you when you do it. It may not be kind of a flash of insight, but there's some reality that sinks in. And the benefit of that kind of small insight is that you become more peaceful. Because you're no longer so concerned about your body. You're no longer so concerned about whether you're old or not. You're no longer so concerned about what other people think about you. Forget about those blooming other people anyway. But who cares what they think? They are deluded. I'm not going to care about what deluded people think, because their ideas are wrong anyway. Don't allow yourself to be trapped by the opinions of others. If you meet someone like Ajahn Brahm, and Ajahn Brahm tells you off, okay, then be worried about it. But if the person next door or the person in the street says that, wow, you're looking really old, you think, yeah, I have succeeded, because if the deluded people say this to me, it means I'm on the right track. Right? So that is the right way to think about things. Don't worry about the world. If you worry about what the world thinks about you, you are worrying about what delusion is thinking about you. And if you worry about what delusion is thinking about you, you are never going to become a wise person. So forget about that. Instead, allow the reality to sink in. You gain clarity. You become less obsessed about what you look like, concerned about it. For that reason, you become more peaceful. And when you become more peaceful, when you come to sit down in your meditation practice, it's going to become more powerful because you have less attachment to the body. The biggest problem in meditation, the number one enemy of meditation practice, is attachment to the body and the five senses. If you can let go of that a little bit, even by contemplating old age in this way, you're already going to have much more success as a consequence. So when we talk about insight in Buddhism, it's important not to set the bar too high, but to be realistic about what we mean by insight. These small kind of insights, small adjustments to seeing the world as it actually is, are probably far more important for you than thinking about the big insights. Because the big insights are usually not immediately accessible to most of us, right? They're going to be far away. Huh? But these small things are always going to be useful. Even if you are a good meditator already, even if you have some success in your samadhi practice, this is going to improve that success in your samadhi if you can let go of your body a little bit more. Huh? So this is the idea of using the idea of old age, yeah, to actually gradually not allow the mind to grip your body so hard, and also grip the body of the people and animals and the servants around us. So, there you are, old age. Let's go on to the next one here. I was going to have a sip of this beautiful tea, first of all. Okay, so let's move on to the next one. And what should be described as liable to fall sick? Partners and children, male and female servants, goats and sheep, chickens and pigs, elephants and cattle are liable to fall sick. Yeah, everyone is liable to fall sick. This is the nature of reality. It's not something you can avoid. Nothing has gone wrong. Even if you get cancer, nothing has gone wrong. It is to be expected that you get cancer. So when you get cancer, don't be surprised. Say, oh yeah, I got cancer, to be expected. Is that how you think? It's hard, right? But this is kind of the point. It's a little bit difficult, but that's kind of the idea. These attachments are liable to fall sick. Someone who is tired, infatuated, and attached to such things, themselves liable to falling sick, seek what is also liable to fall sick. So, this is in many ways similar to the previous one. Old age and sickness are obviously linked in many ways, not completely linked, but they have quite a lot in common. And again, it is useful to reflect on this in the right way, in the way which can be, you know, can be useful for you to let go of the body a little bit. And here, the reflection that you can use here is actually quite similar to the reflection for old age. And this is the idea that when you see people around you getting sick, how do you feel about that? Does it feel bad? Let's say that one of your family members fall sick. Yeah, maybe your parents or your children or your husband and wife or whatever it is. How does that feel to you? And very often, the first thing that we feel, oh no, we feel just like old age. We feel bad about it when it happens. Yeah, and don't, of course, you feel bad about it. That's not really that's to be expected in many ways. The next thing we think after feeling bad about it is, how can I overcome this? How can we heal this sickness, right? And then we try to use our energy, to use our will, to use our intentions to get out of the problem. And again, because we use our willpower, we use our energy to overcome the problem, it makes us feel as if we have the power and the ability to overcome the difficulties of life. In the same way as we use our energy to avoid the signs of old age, it feels like we can overcome old age. In the same way, when it comes to sickness, we try our very best to overcome it. And then when we succeed, we think, yeah, it's because I tried really hard. Yeah, I kind of went on the right kind of cure, and I ate the right food and exercised in the right way so I could defeat illness. Yay! You know, we have the power. Illness is not powerful. We are more powerful than sickness. And sometimes you find religions who kind of think in this way. I think a large part of what we call the New Age movement is about this sort of thing, overcoming the sicknesses of the body and these kind of things. But it is delusion. It is delusory. Maybe sometimes you can overcome sickness, but sometimes you can't. Yeah, people die all the time of sicknesses, And we just remember the ones that survive. We forget about the ones that die. And then we delude us into thinking that it's possible by using our willpower, using our effort to overcome these things. So that gives us an illusion that we are in control when actually we are not. So what we should do instead, when someone falls sick, when you yourself fall sick, we should do exactly the same thing as we did with old age. We should ask ourselves, we should stop for a moment and ask ourselves what is going on. And we should remind ourselves, this is the nature of being a human being. You can expect to fall sick. You can expect to have a heart attack, to have cancer, to have Alzheimer's, to have all of these kind of things. These things are part and parcel of what it means to be a human being. And that is the reality. So you stop for a while. Even small things like COVID. COVID is nothing, right? Tiny little thing. Tiny blip on the radar screen. I was thinking about myself, because last time I was here is almost exactly 3 years ago. That was February 2020. When I came here, I became sick. Remember that, Bobby? Yeah? And he had to take me off to the doctor. And what was really strange was that I had just come through Changi Airport on my way here. And that was when there was a COVID cluster or whatever at Changi Airport at that time. And I came here, I had this kind of slightly like a flu, but it wasn't exactly like a flu. I had a bit of fever, I was feeling a bit out of sorts. And so they took me to the doctor. And the doctor said, yeah, I was kind of really relaxed doctor. Yeah, I don't know what the local doctors have. This one was really relaxed. He was kind of Indian background. He said, yeah, whatever, don't worry too much. And he gave me some kind of, you know, anti-cold, anti-flu medicine. And so I said to him, well, maybe this is COVID. It feels a bit strange. I've just come through Changi Airport. Could be COVID. He said, yeah, if it's COVID, don't worry about it. We can't test anyway, so just go back and kind of be happy with it. Okay. So it may very well be that I've had COVID. I don't know. It's possible I had COVID at the very, very beginning. I'm unsure. I've never had COVID since, but at one time seems to have been a possibility. And so but every time you have these kind of illnesses, yeah, you take a moment to reflect on, well, actually, this is the nature of the body. And that ill, to become ill is very unpleasant. Yeah, you feel out of it. You can't do anything. You lose all your energy. And you can't really do what you want in the world. And I get ill very, very rarely. I tend to have very good health, except when I get COVID here in KL. But when I get it, I feel it's just so miserable. And it reminds you that actually this too is the nature of the human body, yeah? If you are lucky in one lifetime not to get ill very often, well, okay, great. You have some good karma from the past or whatever. But generally speaking, we should expect illnesses in this life. And again, if you think about it in that way, if you use that opportunity to gain that insight, stop, reflect. The Buddha was teaching about this. You are growing in wisdom right there. Instead of pushing it away because it is unpleasant, because you don't want to deal with it, allow it to sink in. This is the nature of the human body here. What happens? It happens exactly the same thing as when you are dealing with old age, right? What happens is that you let go of the body a little bit. You come and do your meditation here in the morning. Please come in the morning if you feel like it. Don't have to, you can. At 8:30 we start the meditation for those of you who didn't make it this morning. Come, try it out, and you will actually find that the meditation goes deeper because you have let go of the body a little bit through a very simple contemplation. It reminds me of this beautiful teaching that Ajahn Chah had. Yeah? Ajahn Chah, Lumpur Chah, Ajahn Brahm's teacher. And apparently he said things like, everything teaches you. And very often we don't take the opportunity of learning from the things around us. Yeah, things that we all have to deal with, illness, old age, looking at the world outside, falling apart. It's almost every opportunity, every moment in life, there are things that can teach us about the nature of reality. Take those opportunities. And if you take those opportunities, you are going to grow in wisdom incredibly fast. And this is where the right view, the very first factor of the Noble Eightfold Path, becomes stronger. It's hard to overestimate the idea of right view. It's incredibly important. And what we are doing by the kind of contemplations I'm talking about now, this is about right view. I don't know if you ever even considered that, right? Maybe you think, oh, right view means believing in karma and rebirth. Okay, I've got right view, finished with number one factor, let's go to number two. No. It's not like that, yeah? Right view is profound. Right view is something you have to develop your entire life. And as you do that, it becomes this force at the root of the path that helps you to develop the path more powerfully. This happens in two ways, yeah? First of all, when you strengthen the idea of right view, it just makes the path work better as a consequence. But when you strengthen the power of right view, it also makes the path more urgent. You feel a sense of urgency in your practice. Why? Because you understand the nature of these things, and you understand how important it is precisely to use every moment of your life to develop this path, because time is shorter. Life is shorter. Before you know it, it's all over. Then maybe it is too late. You don't know where you're going to be reborn in your next life. Maybe you get reborn in a country where you can't even be a Buddhist. Yeah, imagine that. Some countries, if you are a Buddhist, they chop your head off. Yeah, that's kind of bad news, isn't it? So please don't get reborn in those countries, because then you have a serious problem. Let me stop there, because time is going fast. Let's do a little bit more meditation together, have a quick Q&A afterwards. Okay. All right, everyone. So, anyone like to ask any questions or comment on anything? We have someone at the back there, Bobby. Yeah.
Good afternoon, Ajahn. I'd like to know a little bit more about rebirth.
Mm-hmm.
Is rebirth a process? And actually, what goes through the rebirth? Is it a soul, our mind? And what's the difference between reincarnation and rebirth? Thank you.
Okay. So is it a process? Absolutely. Absolutely, it is a process. Everything in life is pretty much a process. So you can expect rebirth to follow along with everything else. And the way that it is talked about in the sutta sometimes is that they talk about an intermediate existence. This is one of those controversial topics in Buddhism, because some people say there is intermediate existence, some people say there's not, but I think it's quite clear in the sutta that there is such a thing. So you die, yeah, and then when you die, you kind of go into an intermediate state, and you can imagine, if you have looked at some of these videos on near-death experiences, people have this feeling of going into, you know, you're leaving your body, the body is left behind, but you haven't really crossed over into a certain new life yet, yeah? There's this feeling that if I go beyond a certain boundary, I cannot return. And that then probably is what we call rebirth, when you go beyond that boundary. But in the meantime, you stay in a kind of intermediate existence, and sometimes you still have the ability to come back to your existing body if you stay in that intermediate existence. And it is then that you kind of, you know, sometimes you hear about the near-death experience, people have like a life review, yeah? Now, if you read the suttas, the word of the Buddha says, you know, you go to a certain realm or certain place, and then you kind of, your life is reviewed. Yeah, in the suttas, it has the idea of the Yama, the Lord of Death, and Yama is reminding you of your bad, your bad and good qualities. Yeah, and then you judge yourself according to your life review. And the way that the life review is supposed to happen is like you are a third person watching your own life. You see your own life progressing as a witness to your own life, and then at the end of that, because you are seeing yourself just like a third person, it's like you judge yourself. And if you judge yourself badly, it means you send yourself to a bad realm. Yeah, if you judge yourself well because you've been living well, you send yourself to a good destination. And so sometimes it is useful in this life to kind of take that third-person perspective on ourselves. Look back, stand apart from ourselves, yeah, a little bit, if you can, and try to see if you're living your life in a good way or not, and maybe adjust a little bit if it isn't quite right. And then, depending then on how you judge yourself, then, of course, you will take rebirth accordingly. So the rebirth process, then you can see here what is going on, is that your mind is always there, yeah? Because it's always you are there, you have left your body behind, but your mind is always going with you. It's a continuation of what you were before. You remember your past life, that was my past life, that's how it looks to you, and now I'm moving into a future existence. It is your mind moving into that future existence. So what is that mind? And what that mind is not, it is not like a permanent entity like a soul or some kind of inherent part of you. Yeah, that is the real you. It's nothing like that. The mind that you have when you get reborn is the same as the mind you have in this life. And if you look at your mind in this life, well, what is it? Well, it is this continuity. Yeah, it is this kind of feeling inside of you, the me kind of feeling. Yeah, the feeling of experiencing things or having feelings of perceiving the world, of willing, of doing things. All that mental activity is what your mind is. So what is it? Well, it is this impermanent flow, this thing that is always changing, always going from one thing to the next one. If you look for an entity, if you look for something stable in that flow of the mind, there's nothing there that is stable, nothing that is the kind of the real you, if you like. All there is changing phenomena all the time, changing. And that sequence, that series of changing phenomena continues when you die and also moves into a future life. So it is the stream of consciousness, the stream of the mind, that goes from one life to the next one, settled in this life and also settled in future lives. And that is kind of the idea how the rebirth process works. So rebirth does not require a soul. It doesn't require something inherently existing to pass from one life to the next one. What is the difference between reincarnation and rebirth? Well, these are just words, so it depends how you use them. Yeah, it's up to you. You can use them whatever way you like. But usually, or often, the idea is that reincarnation has the idea of a soul moving on, right? So that's why we don't use it in Buddhism, because it's often used in that particular way. Whereas rebirth just means that there is a, you know, the mind, the flow of the mind goes on from one life to the next one. That is maybe the distinction there. Are you happy with that reply? Yeah? Okay, good. So, yeah, excellent. So, please, yeah, fire away.
I can. The five daily contemplation, also something really quite similar to this sutta. So can we combine when we do the five daily contemplation?
Yeah, absolutely. So that is true. The five daily contemplation, these are the five themes, and they found in the Gutra number 5, and these contemplations are the contemplation on sickness, old age, death, on everything that's dear and pleasing to me must be separated, must become otherwise, and I'm the owner of my karma is the last one. These are the five, and this is very closely related to that. So absolutely, if you do those five, you're basically doing this kind of contemplation. So absolutely. And one of the nice things the Buddha says about those five contemplations is that they should be done by everyone, yeah? Whether you are a woman or a man, whether you are a nun or a monk, this is for the whole world to do this kind of contemplations. So thank you for that. Yeah.
Hi, afternoon, Ajahn.
Hello.
Yeah, my question is related to this. Assuming that I cannot achieve my enlightenment this life.
Yeah.
How should I do so that I can be born nearer to Buddhist, being a Buddhist, or being nearer to the presence of where I can go towards Nirvana?
Okay. So what you should do is you should just practice to the best of your ability in this life. Do as much as you possibly can. Yeah. And the more you do in this life, that's where you will start out in your next life. So there's two things you should do. First of all, you should try to understand the Buddha's teachings properly. And if you understand the teaching properly, it means that in your next life, you will recognize the teaching. And so you will probably become a Buddhist again because you recognize the teachings, right? So you learn the teachings, you carry on in your next life. The second thing you should do is you should practice as well as you can, so your heart is as pure as possible, so you have a good starting point in your next life. Yeah, you get rid of most of the anger and ill will, you develop more compassion and understanding and kindness for all the people in the world, and those qualities will be with you when you kind of get reborn, wherever you get reborn in your next life. The third thing you should do is make sure you have a lot of kalyanamitas. Yeah, number one kalyanamita is the Buddha, so make sure you make the Buddha your friend. Yeah. This is what we're learning on this retreat, how to make the Buddha your friend, because we're going straight back to the suttas. Make sure that you have many kalyanamitas, many good teachers who teach you the teachings in a way that aligns with the Buddha's word. Yeah, so good teachers in this life. Make sure you have many kalyanamitas in your ordinary life, like all the people around you here now. And when you have lots of friends who think in the right way, very likely you will be reborn among those friends again in the future, because we are the people we are attached to, that is also where we get reborn. So those are the three things, yeah? Understand the teachings properly, practice to the best of your ability, and ensure that you have good kalyanamitas. Yeah? Understand teachings, practice well kalyanamitas, then you're going to be in business. It's important to be in business. Please.
Yeah, still on the subject of rebirth.
Yes.
I think you mentioned that rebirth is central to the Buddhist teaching.
Yeah.
But understanding the process of rebirth is problematic to me. In the sense that, I think in none of the sutta, the rebirth process has been mentioned in any of the sutta, if I understand it correctly.
It's not mentioned.
It's not mentioned. The process of rebirth, the mechanics of rebirth, I think it's not mentioned anywhere in the sutta. And, in fact, I think one of the monks was commenting that he thinks he understands the rebirth process. He said it is a consciousness that passed from one life to another life.
Yeah.
And Buddha actually scolded him on that. He said, did I actually tell you that?
Well, it's true, because it depends how... Sorry, are you finished now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also, you understand correctly, when we die, all the five aggregate stop. Consciousness stop. So, I think the process of rebirth, I think it's quite difficult to understand, I think, from how the process actually happened. And also, when Buddha was asked what happened to him when he passed away.
Yeah.
And when Arham passed away, did he exist or did not exist? I think he refused to answer.
Yeah.
And
okay.
So it's very problematic for me to understand like, how rebirth actually takes place.
Yeah, okay.
And so, you quote the example of a near-death experience and the recalling the past life.
Yeah.
Using rebirth as an explanation, I think, is plausible. But that may not be the only explanation. Okay, I'm still having trouble understanding the rebirth process.
All right, sure. Okay, well, that's a lot of questions. Like, let's see if I can unravel this a little bit. So, the first thing you're saying is that it's not really explained, the process in the sutras, properly. Yeah? And the reason, it is explained a little, if you start looking in the sutras, it's not explained maybe in one place, but if you start looking in many different places, you can actually put together a picture that gives us some idea what is happening here. And I think that is what you have to do. And the picture, and I think there is a reason for that, because the point of the Buddha is not to explain all the mechanics and details of things. The point of the Buddha is to give you a big picture of reality. And if you start to explain all the little mechanics, all the little details, then very often the details will vary depending on circumstances, right? So that's why it is very hard to explain the details without making it specific. You can maybe explain the details for one person, but for another person may be different. And for that reason, it's better to explain an overall idea that works for everyone rather than going into the details. So often it's better to give a broad stroke, a broad picture view, rather than going into the details. And I think this is one of the reasons why the Buddha doesn't do that. So for example, just to give an idea, for example, if you die in a, because you have very powerful karma, this is, I think, according to the commentary, but also implied in the suttas, if your karma is very, very strong, say that you have the ability to enter a state of samadhi, for example, then the process that happens is that as you are going through the dying process, because you are used to the samadhi, the mind will go naturally to samadhi, and will go into a jhana state. Because the mind goes into the jhana state, you get reborn into jhana like that. And there is no intermediate state for that kind of person. You just go straight from one life to the next one. Or say that you have a very powerful bad karma. You've done something very terrible, killing your parents, or I don't know what it is. Then the karma is so strong that it may take you straight away to a very bad state because the karma is so powerful. But then again, there are people whose karma is somewhere in between, right? So you have people like most people, done a little bit bad, a lot of good, and a lot of neither good nor bad. And then when they die, they kind of, their mind is kind of somewhere in between. And that's where you go to maybe to this intermediate state where you are, and you kind of hang out for a while. And it's very... And in the suttas, and actually, it's very good evidence that there is such an intermediate, even though, according to the traditional Theravada, there is no intermediate. But in the suttas, the evidence is quite strong, and many people have written about this. And that is where you kind of go, and then you are there, and that's maybe where you have your life review, and various things happen, and then when you are ready, the karma ripens, well then actually you go on to the next state as a consequence. So there are many alternatives. And then to talk about the mechanics, it can very easily, you can easily get trapped into the details without actually looking at the overview of what is happening. But the Buddha does talk a little bit about the mechanics as well. So what he says, and this is what you find, for example, in the Nidana Sanghuta, this is the Sanghuta Nikaya on all the connected discourses of the Buddha. Nidana Sanghuta is all about dependent origination. And dependent origination is really about the rebirth process, That is what actually it concerns. And so one of the things that it says in that sutta, it says that it talks about the inclination of the mind. Yeah. So the inclination of the mind that you have when you die, that is what then causes the mind to move in that direction upon rebirth. Yeah, so if your mind, if you have developed your mind in samadhi in this life, and you have easy access to samadhi, because you have easy access, your mind inclines towards it. It inclines toward it because it's enjoyable, and you have access to it. And then your mind goes there, and then it gets reborn accordingly, because of that inclination of the mind. So if you can know the inclination of your mind right now, and for example, you will know that, you try to do some meditation, and you will see what is going on in your mind, that thing that goes on in your mind, that is your inclination usually. Especially after you relax a little bit, you let go of the superficial things, the deeper things are the inclination of the mind. And very often that will be sensual things. It will be thinking about your life now, maybe your job, your family, or whatever it may be, some of the, what are you going to eat, or whatever it is, yeah? And that is a sensual inclination of the mind. Or it may be that you are enjoying your meditation, so maybe your mind is going towards peace, depending on your personality. That gives you an idea of where your mind is inclining, and this is in line with how this is explained in that sutta. The inclination of the mind is where it actually goes in the future. So the process is really just that as long as there is craving, craving has this ability to project you into the future, so it just carries on, right? Just because the body dies, there is no need for any process. The point is just that the mind cannot stop as long as there is craving. And that idea that the mind cannot stop as long as there is craving, that is the insight of a stream enter. So it may be hard for you to understand that, or hard for most people to understand, because this is part of what the insight is about. Remember, we're talking here about the cause of suffering, the second noble truth. Tanha is the cause of suffering. Why? Because it is the cause of rebirth. Pornobhavika tanha, rebirth causing suffering. And what you see as part of being a stream enter, you see how craving projects the mind into the future. As long as there is craving, the mind cannot stop. And just because the body goes, the body is irrelevant. The body is nothing. Yeah, the body is just an empty shell. And so that is what you understand. So there's not much to really, there isn't much mechanics to it. It's just the fact that the mind cannot stop as long as there is craving. Yeah. I think one of the problems is that we take the body as too important. We think that the body is somehow even more fundamental than the mind. The mind is somehow attached to the body. So when the body dies, yeah, then the mind will go. So how can it be that the mind can exist apart from the body? But actually it's the other way around. The mind is primary. The body is secondary. The body is like an appendage to the mind. Yeah. So whether the body is here or not actually is quite irrelevant. And that's why when you hear about the near-death experiences, it is like you come out of your body, but you have an alternative body. A body which looks just like this one, a body that can see, hear, has all the indriyas, all the faculties of this body, but it is not the physical body. It's a more fine material kind of body instead, right? It is drawn out of the other body. So the physical body that we have here, we make too much out of it. We come from the modern materialist perspective of the world, where material phenomena are primary, the mind is secondary. But actually what we need to do, we need to reverse that equation, and we need to say that the mind is primary, and the material phenomena of the world is secondary. And if we reflect on it, I think it's quite obvious that that has to be the case, yeah? Because our primary thing in the world is our experience. We experience the world, and then we deduce from that experience, we deduce the material world, we deduce the laws of physics, we deduce the cosmos around us. But the primary thing is experience, and the primary thing of experience is consciousness, it is mind, it is inner feelings, it is the inner world that is primary. And this is why I think when you, again, from the suttas, when the Buddha talks about what is primary, he talked about this in the Rohitasa Sutta, for example. Yeah, Rohitasa, who is this kind of first astronaut who tries to walk to the end of the universe. And the Buddha says, no, the universe or the world is found inside this fathom-long body with this consciousness. Yeah, it is your experience. That is the world. That is the beginning of the world, the origin of the world. That is the end of the world. Forget about the world outside. We don't know anything about the world outside. It's a cipher. It is uncertain. Don't know what it is. All we can really know is the world inside our own experience. That is always primary. So once we start to think about things in a different way, and we start to think about mind as primary, it resolves so many of those hard questions that we think are there, which actually may not be very hard at all. So it is just craving is the power that drives this process forward. Craving is the thing that projects us into the future. And as long as that is there, the process must carry on. There isn't really much to that process. It is just kind of a carrying on of phenomena as they are. And then you move on and you get reborn. And maybe you take up another body, yeah? Another appendage to the mind, wherever that might be as a consequence. Maybe it's getting late, can you write down your question? And we can maybe do it later on today, because otherwise we don't have a chance to have a break. And a break is important. Let me just see what is happening here. It's only a very short break anyway. 2:30, 2:45. Jeepers, we only have 5 minutes. 5 minutes left. Okay, let's have a 10-minute break, everyone, and then we can come back afterwards and carry on the discussion if you like.